This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. On today's program, Richard Mabian will speak with folks from the Metro Kansas City Climate Change Action Coalition, as well as folks from Bridging the Gap and Metro Energy. But first, my name's Mike Murphy, and here are this week's environmental headlines. Democracy Now! Reports in Texas, people were killed and injured after a blast tore through a chemical plant outside of Houston on April 2nd. The fire at the plant, which produces a highly flammable gas used in the production of jet fuel, was the second such fire at a Houston area chemical plant in less than 3 weeks. On March 17th, a massive fire at a petrochemical plant in Deer Creek sent a toxic cloud of smoke over Houston and as far away as Austin, 150 miles to the west. President Trump is under fire for falsely claiming that windmills cause cancer. Trump made the remark in a speech to the National Republican Congressional Committee, where he touted U.S. oil and gas drilling while mocking renewable energy. The 2019 Izzy Awards for Outstanding Achievement in Independent Media will be shared through four recipients: Earth Island Journal and four of their journalists. Earth Island Journal's issue on women and the environment highlighted the oft-ignored connection between environmental rights and women's rights. A federal judge in Alaska has restored a ban on offshore drilling across large parts of the Arctic Ocean, blocking a 2017 executive order by President Trump that opens up tens of millions of acres for oil leasing. Trump's order sought to reverse several Obama-era measures, but the judge ruled that it exceeded the president's authority, and only Congress has the power to revoke the prior withdrawals of land for oil leasing. The Trump administration is expected to appeal the decision. And lawmakers in New York have agreed to implement the ban on single-use plastic bags. The ban makes New York the second state after California to adopt such a measure. The ban would exclude restaurant takeout bags and plastic garbage bags. And Bloomberg reports an activist shareholder that filed resolutions for 3 years pressuring Shell, a British Dutch oil and gas company, to do more on climate change, says it will withdraw the filings for 2019. In backing down, the shareholder group is signaling Shell has made positive strides. And the New York Times reports, everyone knows an electric fan can make people feel cooler on a steamy day, but could fans moderate the planet's rising temperatures? Some of the world's biggest fossil fuel companies would like to find out. This year, they have invested in Carbon Engineering, a small Canadian company that claims to be on the verge of a breakthrough in solving a critical climate change puzzle, removing carbon already in the atmosphere. At its pilot project in Canada, the company is using an enormous fan to suck large amounts of air into a scrubbing vessel designed to extract carbon dioxide. The gas can then be buried or converted into a clean-burning, though expensive, synthetic fuel. This and other carbon reduction initiatives is part of an emerging effort by fossil fuel industries to remain relevant and profitable in a warming world. With electric cars and solar and wind power becoming increasingly affordable, executives acknowledge that business as usual could put their companies at risk. Already, fossil fuel companies face a barrage of lawsuits, investor resolutions, and regulations prompting them to invest more in clean energy. Advocacy groups are also pressing companies and lawmakers to keep oil and natural gas in the ground by challenging hydraulic fracturing or fracking, especially in Europe, and fighting pipelines meant to transport production from Canada's oil sands. Said a fossil fuel company executive, climate change is no longer seen as a fringe issue. It's a business risk that requires a business response.
All right. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard Mabian. And as usual, I'm glad you're here. And I'm really excited tonight about us being here because we have a group of people here with us who are going to discuss some information about Earth Day. And I'm really excited because this group that's here is a group that I'm a member of. This is the Metro Kansas City Climate Chain Coalition, Climate Action Coalition. And it's a newly forming group. It really got its start around December. But in that length of time from December to now, this just exploded into what I consider to be a crowd favorite. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about tonight. They were on here once before, I think, with Craig Lobo, and they introduced the group then. But now we're going to talk about volunteerism. And I think this would be the appropriate group to do it because this group is not a hands-on doing kind of a group. It's one that's kind of in the process of creating a climate change consciousness. That's what I'm saying about it. It's making climate change a kitchen table topic of discussion. So first I'll go around and we have two parts of the program. On this first part, I will introduce the two people who will be helping me with this presentation. You want to start it, Kelly?
Hi, I am Beth Pauly. I am the Development and Advocacy Manager for Metropolitan Energy Center, and we serve on the steering committee for the Metro KC Climate Action Coalition for building efficiency and clean transportation.
Okay, and?
Thanks. Appreciate it, Beth. You know, thanks. First of all, this is Hannes Zacharias. I'm also a member of the Climate Action Coalition here, kind of the group that helped start it back in December. And I was formerly the county manager for Johnson County, Kansas, but currently a professor of practice at the University of Kansas out of Lawrence in the Edwards campus.
Okay. Now, those are the two talented people that I have here with me, so y'all get ready. What I'm going to do first is paint a picture of Earth Day. I think that needs to be painted so that people who are listening can understand how the rest of what we're going to do today fits into this. And it actually goes by Earth. Each Earth Day was set back in 1970. And I love this sheet I have in my hand because it says at the height of the culture, at the counterculture in the United States, 1970 brought on the death of Jimi Hendrix, the last Beatle album, Simon and Garfunkel, Bridge Over Troubled Waters, war raged in Vietnam, and students nationwide overwhelmingly opposed it. At the time, Americans were slurping lead gas through massive V8 sedans. Industry was bleached out smoke and sludge with little fear of legal consequences or bad press. Air pollution was common, accepted as the smell of prosperity. I like that, the smell of prosperity. I remember those days. Mm-hmm. I remember going by filling stations and smelling gas. And, you know, you had no problem with environment. Was a word that appeared more often in spelling bees than on evening news. Although mainstream America largely remained oblivious to environmental concerns, the stage had been set for a change by the publication of Rachel Carson's book, the New York Times bestseller, Silent Spring, in 1962. The book represented a watershed moment, selling more than 500,000 copies in 24 countries, and began to raise public awareness and concern for living organisms, the environment, and links between pollution and public health. Earth Day, 1970. Gave voice to the emerging consciousness, channeling the energy of the anti-war protest movement and putting environmental concerns on the front page. You know, I was telling my guest here when they came in that up to this year, I have on times on Earth Day came on and talked about how the environmental movement has been failing. Since 1970, the consciousness that it talked about just has not been making it reaching the American public. We have always, when we've had Earth Day, if you showed up at an event, it was like you were preaching to the choir. Everybody there were the people that you saw all the time who were involved in the environmental world. But now, this is the first year I've been able to come back, and I'm really excited about this group. So, Hans, I'm going to have you first Tell us about the group. This is what we're doing.
Well, the group, I think, is, like you said, the Metro KC Climate Action Coalition that started back in December this last year, really as the brainchild of Lindsay Constance and Mike Kelly, mayor of Roland Park. Lindsay is a councilmember from Shawnee. And what's remarkable about that, Richard, is the fact that, as you realize, within a matter of, I think, about 2 or 3 weeks, they were able to go ahead and amass about 130 people coming together. I'd say about a third to a half were policymakers. We had Mayor Sly James. We had the governor of Maryland on speakerphone and those sort of activities, various dignitaries throughout the country talking about how do local governments actually make a significant change in drawing down carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and start reducing, not just kind of reducing the rate of increase of CO2, but actually reducing CO2 coming in the future in our atmosphere. And it was the first time I've seen that much energy around an issue with that many policymakers in one room. And it gives me the sense that, indeed, the mantra, I think, is there, that this group is saying, since the federal government's been unable to make strong move in this area, nor states as well, local governments are saying, how do we act collectively and collaboratively to go ahead and make meaningful difference in reducing CO2 emissions? I'm excited about that.
Oh, yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, that's what captivated my attention. I thought it was the greatest thing, and for it to be in Kansas City, I thought it was a one-up for us. I mean, because these kind of organizations that large hitting that many municipalities have not come to a point of working in concert with each other. How did you find out about it?
I actually found out about it on Twitter. I think it was on Twitter. I worked with Mayor Kelly for my internship, so I worked with him while I was working at Metropolitan Energy Center. And so I reached out to him, and I asked him what it would take for nonprofits to be involved. Metropolitan Energy Center has been working with energy efficiency, with clean transportation solutions for 35 years, and municipalities are a big stakeholder of ours. So I thought that, you know, I really wanted us to have a seat at the table so that we can help move along whatever relevant projects were going to come and help provide resources to help with the solutions.
I think that was another aspect of it, is it's kind of two sections, even on the website, and we do have a website, and that's at mkccac.org. You can go there, and what we're talking about, you can actually see it. But the thing that I really liked about it is you have two groups. You have the group of elected officers from around the metropolitan area, but then you have the hands-on folks, the ones that are out there making things work, either with program-wise or raising the funding that's needed for programs to work. Mark, Mid-America Regional Council, is there, and that in itself takes us over the top, because we have the leading group that's engaged in creating what it is we need to know about this carbon reduction. So that's where people like myself ended up fitting into it. So now we brought the decision makers with those people who are out here creating solutions. We also are working off this book called Drawdown that's being used internationally give people some suggestions and areas that they can use for their own individual. And I like that you said about move away, still waiting for the government to come in to make this happen. We have ways of doing things now locally. We need to make sure we do it locally. And if we come locally, then we're dealing with individuals. So that's a good place for us to be.
Well, it's exactly right, Richard. And I think the thing exciting about Drawdown is that it provides an avenue for us to go and actually reduce carbon emissions, as opposed to saying it's just, you know, fait accompli, we can't make any change. We can make some real differences.
Right.
And the book really talks about some, you know, 80 or so different solutions that are possible in kind of a descending order, the most effective and you know, less effective, but all very effective to make things happen that individuals can do. And that's kind of the exciting thing, what's happening this next Saturday during Earth Day.
Yes, tell us about that.
Well, yeah, so the Metropolitan Kansas City Climate Action Coalition has organized basically a chance to go ahead and start making a real difference in reducing climate CO2 emissions. And that is trying to meet this Saturday from 1 to 3 o'clock at the Lake Lodge at Swope Park. And what we'll be doing is we'll be restoring the health and resiliency of the wild land there by, you know, hand cutting and stump tree exotic invasive species. The honeysuckle, as you know, is a threatening species that way. So we'll be talking about taking that out, but also planting other items as well as a way to go ahead and manage the forests and green spaces to reduce carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Those are kind of small things to a degree,
right.
But guess what? Those small things add up a great deal. And so we're trying to go ahead and say we're going to allow during Earth Day put our our hard elbow grease to work, as well as our policy ideas into real action. So come on down to Swope Park at Lake Lodge and kind of volunteer as well.
Well, if it would be good, they could, but unfortunately on this particular event, it's already booked out. There's no more spaces open.
Sorry about that.
There's no more spaces open for people to be there, but we wanted to use this as a catalyst. One of our members, when they heard about what we were doing, wrote in and said, it's great to see that we're walking the talk. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's needed to be there. What we're going to do, we're doing this with Bridging the Gap, and Kristen could not be in town today, so we did a pre-recording of her. So we're going to stop now and take a break, and when we come back on, we'll come back on with that pre-recording because she explains exactly what it is we're going to be doing. Thank you.
Support for KKFI comes to you in part from Barrel of the Bottoms, the creative hub for writing and performance located in the historic West Bottoms District. Barrel of the Bottoms offers a community writing office, group writing nights, a podcast recording studio, and a showcase venue for a variety of media. For more information, barrelofthebottoms.com. Barrel of the Bottoms, distilling Kansas City creativity.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and if you want to join this conversation, come on and give us a call. Don't wait until the last minute to do so. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
Shoshana Zuboff.
When it comes to surveillance capitalism, to get into the global exploitation, I've tried to isolate some of the economic imperatives at work here. Competition in surveillance capitalism revolves around predicting the future. So surveillance capitalists are competing on who's got the best predictions. The best predictions approximate observation, right?
Alternative Radio, Wednesday morning at 9.
Less lawn, more native landscaping for our lakes. On today's Current Cast. You might like the look of a clean-cut lawn, but if you have lakefront property, experts say not to mow all the way to the shoreline.
The most important thing you can do for your lake is to create a buffer zone. And this is a patch of native plants along the lakeshore.
That's landscape architect Fred Rosamulski. He says even modest buffers can trap pollutants such as fertilizers and loose soils before they reach a lake. While the roots of a plant in a buffer zone prevent erosion, the flowers and branches provide valuable habitat for wildlife. And these buffers don't need to keep people away. Grass paths can provide eco-friendly access to the lake. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, supported by New York's Environmental Protection Fund and Sea Grant, online at currentcast.org.
Okay, Kristen, why don't you introduce yourself?
Good morning, Richard. I'm Kristen Riott, and I'm Executive Director of Bridging the Gap, which is Kansas City's probably largest environmental group, and certainly we have the most diverse program slate of any group in town.
I wanted to make sure your voice was able to be heard while we're already talking about this. So
yeah,
I got three questions
so
for
kind.
You. Oh, nobody could do this
lay,
the way
lay
you
them on
it.
Me. Lay
nobody
on
could
me,
do this
would
the
say.
Way you would do it. I got three questions, and the first one is the tree planting process. What is that about? Because it's happening internationally, but there's a reason that people are focusing in on getting trees planted. Can you tell me a little about
right.
that?
Right. Well, there's a ton of reasons to plant trees, but the one that's most relevant that we're talking about this morning is to help get ready for climate change.
Okay.
Because trees play a major role in cooling our city. And that's going to be very significant as we become more and more like Houston, let's say, over the course of this century.
Right.
But that cooling the city is not by any means the only benefit of trees. They also beautify our city. They actually produce mental health benefits for people. Everybody's calmer when there are trees. They are known to reduce crime rates. They're known to reduce speeding. They also play a lot of other biological roles. They provide habitat for wildlife. They supply food for pollinators like bees. They retain topsoil. They retain stormwater. There's just I could spend a whole hour talking to you about the benefits of trees.
They talk about trees. Jesus Christ, God talked about trees in the Bible. I mean, it's like it's a major entity in our existence, and we really don't give it the attention that is needed.
Yes, thank you for saying that. They kind of seem like wallpaper, and we don't really pay as much attention. But actually, they're doing an enormous amount of good. One of the leading benefits in urban settings for trees is that they literally cleanse the air of pollutants. And particularly along busy roads, if you line a busy road with trees, that they will act as a buffer not only for noise but also for particulates that matter that's coming out of the back of automobiles.
Okay, we'll have you back to talk about that. Now, this activity that we're going to have on April the
13th. Yeah.
Kind of explain what it is we're doing. You call it a prairie restoration. What is
yes.
that?
Well, our wildlands program works on remnant prairies around Kansas City. And technically, a prairie is land that has never been plowed. Now, on April 13th, we're not actually working on a prairie. We're working on a glade, which is kind of where it has less sunlight than a full prairie. There's more woodland near a glade. But the principle is the same. We're taking soil that has never been turned over by a plow and which is rich with living organisms, microbes of all kinds, and it also has a sleeping seed bank in it that could extend back for decades, those seeds. And those seeds are things like coneflower that is actually adapted to Kansas City's conditions. It's not the same as a purple coneflower in Wisconsin, let's say. So all those seeds are there, all those microbes are there. But the thing that's preventing them from growing is that there's a layer of invasive exotics. And there's a kind of a list of these invasive exotics that we don't like at all at Kansas City Wildlands. And we remove them from that land and allow that original ecosystem to sprout and come back up and become fully supportive of a rich web of life.
Boy, this is going to be a learning experience for those of us that are participating in this, right?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, I'm really loving that. That'd be really great, and it gives us something to look forward to.
Well, it does, and what I love about it is our wildlands group has 450 acres within the greater Kansas City area of these restored wildlands, and when we restore these lands, they develop these very long-rooted original plants, and these very long-rooted plants actually sequester carbon from the air. They sink carbon from the air.
All right.
So 5 acres of restored prairie. Not, I don't have the figures for glades per se, but 5 acres of restored prairie is the equivalent of taking an automobile off the roads every year.
Wow, that's great. I want to talk about volunteerism because you're in the business and others of having activities from time to time where people can volunteer. Can
yes.
you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, nothing would give me more pleasure than to talk about that. I just love volunteerism. I call it the noble army of people who, in their busy lives, carve out time to give to a cause in the form of showing up somewhere and doing some work that needs to be done for that cause. And we're privileged at Bridging the Gap. We work with 1,800 volunteers a year. For our volunteers, we offer the opportunity to get with nature. We're volunteering with tree planting events. We have volunteer events that relate to the wildland restorations that we're talking about. But all year long, we also offer people an opportunity to work in our recycling centers that we manage for the city of KCMO. So you can really see the world of stuff that we're living in and this kind of immense amount of material goods that come through those centers, and you can learn a lot about that. So if you're interested in volunteering for us, and I sure encourage you to do it, we'll try to show you a really enjoyable and good time. Please go to bridgingthegap.org/volunteer.
Okay, now needless to say, I was sitting there just totally speechless. I, in fact, had no idea that that is what we were going to be doing on the 13th. And when she started explaining that, I had chills running through me, realizing as an old environmental head that I am, that's going to be a tremendous learning experience. And she talked about seeds being there for you know, how many years is it just down there in the surface? But I also was able to see we're going to be removing the stuff that is stopping seeds, those trees from growing. That is just fabulous. I wanted you all to know that. What I'm going to do right now, I'm going to open up the line for you. So if anyone's out there and they would like to call in to make a comment or to join us in the conversation for a brief moment, dial 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. What'd you think about that?
That was, I mean, same as you, it was very, very enlightening. You know, we have a different field of study, I guess, so yeah. to speak, at Mentor Energy Center. So it's really great to hear how all of these other facets of environmentalism work together. You know, like Mike said, when he was forming the Metro KC Climate Action Coalition, there's really not a one size fits all
right.
To reversing global warming or to, you know, slow climate change. And so it's really important that we give all of these different perspectives together to work towards those solutions. So.
How about you, Hunter?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think I just learned a new term called glades.
Yes.
Did not know that. I grew up in western Kansas, so prairie is really near and dear to my heart. But the idea of making that connection, saying that 5 acres of prairie area basically takes one vehicle off the road for a year in terms of its impact on the carbon CO2 emissions, which is incredible. So these sort of things is great, like you said, for education.
Yes.
It also allows to go and actually put some muscle behind our words to go and actually take out invasive species that allows kind of nature to come back to its original course where it was, you know, many, many years ago. So I think it's a great educational experience. It's a great way to go and actually put your words into action. And a great way to go and help the environment, kind of a trifecta, if you will, for this Saturday.
I do, and I want people listening to understand that's why we want to talk about volunteerism, because that's what this is an example of. And like I said, we're trying to walk the walk, so we're showing you as an organization where we're taking on this responsibility, and we just happen to do it around Earth Day. Earth Day is the 22nd. We're going to be doing this on the 13th, so hopefully we lead it into this. But there will be activities like this going on all over the metropolitan area. And I'm glad that she spoke, because sometimes when you think in terms of volunteering, you think you're becoming a person's employee. You're going out to help them do their job. And that's not what this is about. And I think she showed that in what she said we're going to be doing. We all want to feel what can I do to contribute? I talk about the Prius generation. I usually get a room full of laughter when I do. But I'm saying there's other ways for us to be able to contribute. And what we're doing is by us as the here and now generation contributing, we're teaching the future generation what should be their responsibility. So there's a lot to be gained from this. So if you're listening to us and you're thinking about it, I'm sure KKFI will be listing things. In fact, the second part of this show, we're going to talk about a couple of activities that's coming up. Start dialing in on it. Start looking for things that you can contact. Like she said, you can contact Bridging the Gap, you know, and go to their volunteer page. And I'm sure there's like that with most of the other organizations that are in this town. Kind of go back to the...
Well, I think just to kind of reinforce that stuff, Richard, the idea, I think what we're trying to do is develop an emotion, I guess, an environmental consciousness.
Yes.
So volunteerism is kind of what we're going to do on the 13th is great, but every day we can kind of think about these issues. Let's talk about not having a really plastic straw with your drink. Let's talk about recycling cardboard. Let's talk about being more conscious when you go and fuel up your car to do it, you know, during times when it's not hot weather, to kind of reduce that kind of emissions of fuel going in the atmosphere. Let's talk about planting a tree, doing gardening. Those sort of activities. There are little things that really add up a great deal, and we've got to really amplify it, our environmental consciousness on a day-in and day-out basis, and certainly volunteerism activities we're doing this next Saturday help with that. But this should be something, you know, top of mind. If we're going to make a change in our carbon dioxide emissions and bring it down, it's got to be a multifaceted approach day in and day out.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's one issue that's going on in the environmental world has to do with recycling, because of China saying that they no longer want to buy our recycled material. People are panicking. I mean, some of your cities around the nation are even talking in terms of getting rid of their recycle programs. My attitude about it, because working in the low-income community, we haven't had a whole lot of choice of what we could do, so we work with people. And that's what we should have been doing across the board, even with the recycling program, because the recycling program was another way of providing the American public with a convenience. You didn't have to do it. All the biggest thing you had to do was some of those who would wash stuff out is separate your trash. but we didn't have to do anything past that. We should have been teaching people about the reduction of use of what would be considered unnecessary material. The industry has created all of this unnecessary material, and we've just been taking it in when we buy stuff. But we wouldn't buy stuff that came in certain boxes. They would stop making them.
Well, you're right. And the single-use plastic dialogue that's going on right now is certainly part of that as well. And you're seeing Lawrence kind of look at that as well to kind of, you know, at least have a social conscience about why do we need to have single-use plastics available and we don't need to have that. So
right.
there's this really kind of whole effort. And I think my sense is that the Kansas City, the Metropolitan Kansas City Climate Action Coalition is kind of at the beginning point of the tipping point to kind of really bring us to a social consciousness to say we all have to work together. We only have one planet. We can do things about it, but it's going to take everybody to really work on a regular basis to make a difference.
I agree with you. That's why I'm so happy for Eco Radio, because we started this program, as you know, back in 2000 and I think 7 or 8, and we are still the only station in town that has a regularly scheduled environmental program once a week to come in and bring in folks that are doing stuff so it can be heard by the public. And you'd be surprised how many people actually listen to what we're doing. I really appreciate you all coming in. If there's something you want to do to check on our system, I'm not for sure if they have this on the website yet. I'm not for sure. If they don't, you know, check with the Eco Radio here at KKFI. I'm sure we can get Mike to get it on our website so that people will know what we're doing, not only for this, but just about Earth Day coming up. So thank both of you for coming, and we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in to KKFI. The future is here. Simply tell your smart speaker, play KKFI. If you haven't already, give it a shot. KKFI can be wherever you are.
KKFI is the Kansas City area's independent, non-commercial community radio station. We seek to stimulate, educate, and entertain our audience to reflect the diversity of the local and world community, and to provide a channel for individuals and groups, issues and music that have been overlooked, suppressed, or underrepresented by other media. Interested in volunteering? Contact 816-994-7864 or go online at kkfi.org and click the volunteer tab. Thank you for listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In Zimbabwe, electricity shortages often cause lengthy blackouts. Without power, health clinics are unable to store vaccines and other life-saving medicines properly.
What we realized is that some of the drugs were not being kept at the right temperature, and basically the health quality, the services were at risk.
Natalia Lanou is with the UN Development Program, or UNDP. The international organization works with health clinics in Africa, Asia, and elsewhere. She says some clinics use diesel generators for backup electricity, but that is expensive and polluting. So 2 years ago, in partnership with the Global Fund, her organization began installing solar systems at clinics in Zimbabwe. Now,
we've got solar panels on over 400 clinics.
They provide reliable, renewable energy. That helps ensure that doctors and nurses can safely store medicines, run life-saving machines, and access important data. The program is expanding. UNDP has now installed solar on clinics in Zambia, Libya, Namibia, Sudan, and South Sudan. So the power of the sun is not only helping to reduce carbon pollution, it's helping to improve people's health and even save lives. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Okay, this is Richard Mabian. I'm back again, and we're getting ready to do our second part of the show. We have a new person who has joined us here at the table, so I will let her introduce herself first.
Hi, Richard. My name is Natalie Phillips. I am the communications coordinator with Metropolitan Energy Center.
Yes, and when you are a lone person, when you work alone like I do, and you have needs to have various stuff done, communication is an area that is a very important area. I've already got her scared. I told her that she could end up doing something for me. I don't know what it is. She's in trouble now. This part of the show, I want to focus in on the the volunteer part of it on Earth Day and the volunteer part of it. I did not realize it until I was getting some paperwork ready to come on here on the show that 2020 will be the 50th year anniversary of Earth Day. I think that is fantastic. And I think that our organization, forming as it has, is right on time to lead us into that 50th year. So now I'm proclaiming 2019 as being the beginning of the volunteer efforts that's going to be needed to make 2020 the conscious bearing year for the Kansas City metropolitan region. Keep in mind, we have to prepare our future generation for their lives. I keep saying that the industry is proclaiming that almost 67% of the jobs in America will be robots. 67%. With that being the case, that means that our future generations, we need to be intentionally teaching them how to love science and technology. Those are going to be the people. I love to use the word love technology, and because those will be the people who will be getting those jobs. They won't be hiring you. They'll have 1,000 of them applying for a job, just like they do now with the hands-on jobs. But it's only going to be a certain few who are going to end up being the ones who get hired. And that's going to come from the person who has the heart for that kind of business, those kinds of jobs. So we need to be able, as the adult population, set the standards for our future generation, whether it's your kid or not. They need to be able to see this going on all kind of bases. I mean, I even extend this over to the school. They just built a school, opened a school last week in Olathe. I believe they call it Olathe West, if I'm not mistaken. And I wanted to go so bad because it was supposed to be a state-of-the-art high school. And I kept telling people, you might walk in there and find out you're walking on air. I would not be surprised, because those are the kind of schools that our children are going to be getting exposed to. So we have to make sure, especially in the inner city, that we are providing ways for our kids to be able to compete in that world that they're growing up in. Okay, so now we're going to talk about volunteerism, and the way we'll do it is our two guests that we have here from Metro Energy, they're going to tell us about a few activities they got coming up that I think will be of interest to us. So, Sonia, and I'll follow your lead.
Just to give a little bit of background about what Metropolitan Energy Center does and kind of how you can contribute. Like Beth said, Metropolitan Energy Center has been fighting climate change and advocating for clean air in the Kansas City area for more than 35 years. And transportation and electricity are now combined for the number one source of greenhouse gases in the United States. So all of our volunteer opportunities are going to be aimed at reversing that. Basically, all of our work is happening in the clean transportation and energy efficiency space, and we are hoping to engage people across Kansas and Missouri to make sure that everyone can empower their local communities to start advocating for clean air.
Yeah, Metropolitan Energy Center, we're a very small organization, and so volunteers really are the backbone of our organization. We've always relied on our all-star volunteers, and in the past, some of these folks have launched their own clean energy programs. They've helped buildings and also fleets of vehicles go green. And right now, as we've talked about with the Metro KC Climate Action Coalition, we're at this critical tipping point globally with regards to our climate, and we're also at this critical tipping point in Kansas City as our city continues to rapidly develop. So we're seeing a really big demand for sustainable development and clean transportation and, public outcry from individuals and communities who want to come together and make a better world for future generations, and want to make sure that the city we're building is sustainable and that our neighborhoods are environmentally empowered. So we are expanding our volunteer program so that we can support this mission and so that we can support this growth, so that people can empower themselves with tools to advocate for more efficient buildings and you know, access to clean public transportation and also for breathable air. So the primary way that we do this, that our volunteers help support this, is through education and outreach. Okay. So people can sign up to, you know, help us with events.
Explain that.
Okay. So we have various community events around different parts of the city. One example might be a ride and drive, so an electric vehicle ride and drive.
Explain that.
Okay, so electric vehicles are ride and drives. Let people explore the world of electric vehicles with an electric vehicle enthusiast, and these folks are usually volunteers.
So if I wanted to experience that, I call you and and you will give me an appointment or a time to come in, and am I driving or riding?
You would be, if you're doing a ride and drive, you would be riding while the other person is driving. So,
okay. but yet you get a chance to sit. People are asking questions. That's why I'm asking that.
Yeah, no, that's
someone
great.
Asked me the other day, how long does it, this was at a black church, and I was really impressed that this person came to me because of who I am and asked me, but he wanted to know, how long does it take you to recharge your battery? Does anybody know?
Ooh, so it actually depends on the charger.
Yeah.
So level one charging usually takes about 6 to 8 hours.
Okay.
And level two charging usually takes about 4.
I told him I thought it was about probably an 8 hour, like an overnight thing, to do it. And but people are curious. I had another guy, and he came to me, and his wife has an electric vehicle. And so he's got an app on his phone that shows him where all your charging places are in the metropolitan region. Well, when he opened the map out, there was only one in Kansas City, Kansas.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. My God. He couldn't believe it. I think a person with a vehicle need to know that.
Yeah.
If you get low, that might not be the place you want to end up in if you don't have a place to charge it, right?
Yeah, you definitely, there's a whole new culture around electric vehicles. There's a little bit of you have to train yourself. You know, you're not just stopping to get gas when you're running out of fuel. You do have to work those parts into your day.
Right.
So that's something that our volunteers help with. They can help explain, you know, the change anxiety of an electric vehicle, how to go about that process.
They do that by going talking to people or groups and stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, how does that work? I mean, your volunteers real involved. I mean, y'all sending out ambassadors. That's what you're doing.
We are creating ambassadors. We are. Yeah, we think that that's a really powerful way to volunteer with an organization, because you can take that knowledge with you everywhere you go. So you're not just, you don't just use that knowledge when you're volunteering with Metropolitan Energy Center. But we help usher our volunteers through a buddy system. So we have an orientation once a month, typically, and we invite people in to learn more about our organization, and we give people a list of events. So the first event, you're not by yourself, you're not with another new volunteer, you're with either a Metropolitan Energy Center staff person, or you're with a very experienced volunteer. So that'll kind of help you, you know, get the flow of the events and get your feet wet.
Yeah, okay. So Jen, just kind of basically describe the caliber of volunteers you're getting.
We have all different levels of volunteers. We do have the professional volunteers who perform energy audits on nonprofits, on houses, but we also have everyday volunteers who can help us with, you know, tasks around the office, doing filing, doing answering phone calls, and then, you know, student-type volunteers, people who are interested in doing that outreach with these different events. So.
Okay. Now, the event on the 13th is already booked out. We can't take any more people in. But you have a couple of things coming up that people can come to, right? Tell us about those.
Yeah, so we have a couple of really exciting events coming up. We have an Earth Day event of our own happening on April 20th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And you guys were talking a lot about environmental consciousness and sort of how we can make these everyday choices accessible to people. And that's really what our event is about. It's about these everyday lifestyle choices. And it's an interactive event happening at our eco-friendly demo home called Project Living Proof.
Okay. Where is that?
917 Cleaver 2 Boulevard, off the plaza.
Right.
So it's an old home. It's a gorgeous house, and it's been fully rehabbed to be totally resource efficient. And it has a resource efficient, sustainable urban garden in the back. So we will be providing tours of that home as well as interactive tours of the gardens. We will be having ride and drives as well, like Beth said earlier. So if you
come give me a ride.
Yeah. So hop in an electric vehicle. Yeah. We also are going to have even sustainable plant-based food available. Okay. So it's going to be kind of a grab bag of different everyday choices that you can make.
What kind of time are we talking about? What time of day?
So it's 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Anytime there. It's like an open house type event with all kinds of local organizations that are going to be just excited to fill you in.
The 20th, is that a Saturday?
It is.
Okay. That's
yeah.
Great. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah. Good day. All right, so now that one sit there, and you have another one coming, right?
We do. Okay. We do. We have an event that you actually told us about. You are the brains behind this event, and it is something that we are so, so, so excited about.
Yeah.
We are, we've been excited ever since you told us about it. But on April 30th, we are hosting a fuel change launch party. And feel free to chime in.
Okay. Just fine.
Okay. So Fuel Change is a national campaign sponsored by the Dream Corps. And it is the hashtag is Green for All, and it is working to build urgency around the negative health impacts that transportation emissions have on underserved communities, particularly communities of color, and really encouraging advocacy around these issues. And there is a big focus on art, on music, and the Fuel Change launch video. And the goal is to include people who have been traditionally left out of the conversation. So we are partnering with a local group here in Kansas City, Poetry for Personal Power, and we are connecting all of those pieces of environmental health, of behavior health, of mental health, and of our physical health. And Serenity Speaks with Poetry for Personal Power is actually going to be hosting this event. So we will be having dialogues, reflections, and reactions around the event, and also just be here as a resource provider for further information for electrification solutions.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I'm those of you who have listened to me before, I'm a Green for All fellow. I went through Van Jones's course in 2008 and became his ambassador out here in the world. And they have done some things here, but this is really exciting. I was talking to him about this course that I'm involved in Cornell, and they wanted to know if we would host this watch party, and it happened to be dealing with electric, with the fuel circumstance, and I knew that fit into your organization's agenda real well. And they like working with millennials, and that's what this group that we got to be the poetry people, they also work with millennials. So we're going to have a group of younger folks there, and they're going to be out. We're just going to have this program over at your place. I'm excited about it. I'm doing what I normally do. I'm connecting, and so I'm what she called. They call me the brain behind it, but I'm going to sit back in a chair somewhere and enjoy the program. I might be the only rest I get this month. All right, we got a couple of minutes left. I want you to kind of give a pitch. We're down to, okay, we got a minute left. I want you to kind of wrap up about Metro Energy, and then we'll carry ourselves out of here.
So on the topic of electric vehicles, we have a really exciting program happening. So you discussed just a little bit ago that we've got some really big hurdles in terms of equity of the locations of charging infrastructures. And also, as far as education, people just don't know what an electric vehicle is and how they can drive one. So we're launching a new program called Electrify Heartland that is geared towards solving those issues. So
we have a diverse group of stakeholders who were involved in setting the groundwork for our current charging system. And so a lot of them are, people from that original group of Electrify Heartland, but also some new people to help guide us to expand the infrastructure so it's more equitable, to expand it on along the corridors, to also increase outreach to dealerships, to consumers, to increase the utilization.
Okay, well, gang, you've had your pitch. We've given you your pitch on Earth Day. We've given you a pitch on volunteerism. And we asked you to come out and get involved with us out here in the marketplace. Thank you.
And now the calendar of events for the week of April 8th. On Tuesday from 7 to 8:30 p.m., Elaine Giesel, chair of the Sierra Club Kanza Group, and a marine biologist will speak on land, water, and wildlife, emerging issues, and threatened laws. Members and non-members are invited. This is at the Unitarian Fellowship in Topeka, Kansas. More info at 785-438-7772. Also Tuesday night at 9 p.m., a class on keeping backyard chickens will be held at Johnson County Community College, 12345 College Boulevard in Overland Park, Kansas. For more info, go to ce.jccc.edu or call 913-469-2323. Also on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., an evening with Dr. Kelly Kincher at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Lawrence. Professor and author Kelly Kincher has long been an advocate for Midwestern medicinal plants and their conservation. And then on Wednesday, April 10th, at 8:30 a.m. at Kansas City City Hall, 10th floor, the renewable direct ordinance would move Kansas City municipal buildings to 100% renewable energy. This ordinance is sponsored by Mayor Sly James and co-sponsored by Councilman Scott Taylor. For more info, contact Kevin Grooms at 816-808-6906. Also on April 10th, the Citizens Climate Lobby meeting at 5:30 p.m. at the Johnson County Library at 9500 Blue Jacket Drive. They will be talking about the new House bill dealing with a carbon fee and dividend for the citizens. And then on Saturday, April 13th, the Flint Hills Day Hike and optional camping organized by the Kanza Group of the Sierra Club. This takes place in Strong City. Contact Renee at 913-488-4445 or email her at randri4445@gmail.com. This will include wide open spaces, beautiful prairie vistas, a 6 to 7 mile loop on the trails of the Tallgrass Prairie National Preserve, including the Bison Pasture and the Overlook Trail, which is considered one of the best hikes in Kansas. Also on April 13th, Saturday, Butterflies at the Library with Monarch Watch. This takes place at the Lawrence Public Library at 707 Vermont. Then on Sunday, the 14th, at the Lawrence Public Library, at the same address, New York Times bestselling author, illustrator, and designer Rachel Ignatovsky will talk about her latest book, The Wondrous Workings of Planet Earth, an illustrated journey through the world's ecosystems. And the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Department of the Army are taking comment on the WOTUS proposal, that's Waters of the United States proposal, and the 60-day public comment period will close on April 15th, 2019. Learn more about the proposed definition at www.epa.gov. These items and more can be found at the kkfi.org Eco Radio KC program page or on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page.
This country is warming twice as fast as the rest of the world. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
20 million people in Venezuela have experienced widespread water shortages in the last 2 months due to electricity disruptions affecting delivery systems. In some places, there is no water for up to 2 weeks.
People in Caracas depend on electrical pumps to get water up to their city's 3,000-foot level. Ordinary citizens of all classes have been driven into the streets to search for water, regardless of whether it's potable.
The Washington Post reports that some residents have to get water from creeks so they can bathe, drink, and cook. Toilets can't be flushed nor kitchens cleaned.
The regime in power, that of Nicolas Maduro, places the blame for the water crisis on the U.S. and the opposition for sabotage. Juan Guaido, the leader of the opposition, blames government mismanagement and corruption.
Thousands of Venezuelans protested on Saturday, backing opposition leader Guaido, according to Reuters.
Runoff in the Upper Missouri River Basin during March far exceeded the previous record set in 1952, causing extreme flooding from Iowa to Nebraska and Kansas.
Yale Climate Connections reports that the causes of the inundation go back to last summer's heavy rains that continued into the fall, saturating soils. Then in mid-March, with snow sitting on top of frozen soil, the bomb cyclone hit, bringing heavy rain. Climate change has made wetter weather more common in the Midwest.
IRTHA reports that the consequences from the flooding could include a large dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico as nutrient-laden waters flow into the Mississippi River.
Another problem from the flooding is that farmers will not be compensated for the millions of bushels of grain in storage that were damaged or destroyed. The federal government has no insurance for that type of disaster.
Some communities along the Missouri are still struggling to restore drinking water weeks after the flooding. The Associated Press reports that in one Iowa community, officials had to use a boat last week to reach facilities to make repairs, and it still could be a couple of weeks before completion. In a Nebraska town, it could be 6 months before the water treatment plant is operating.
The flooding has started a movement by the Republican governors of Nebraska, Missouri, and Iowa to demand more authority over management of the Missouri River, saying that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers should prioritize flood control over things such as protecting fish and wildlife habitat.
There's a national wildlife refuge in the city of New Orleans called Bayou Sauvage, home to 340 species of birds. Late last month, the U.S. government continued a practice there that's been going on for more than 20 years.
10,000 dead Christmas trees were dropped into the bayou to build ecological resilience in marshlands and lagoons.
The trees are collected in New Orleans and are bundled in groups of about 75. Then the National Guard uses helicopters to airlift them to drop sites.
The manager of the refuge told IRTHA that the dead Christmas trees are placed to absorb the energy of waves to reduce shoreline erosion and trap silt, keeping waters clear. When the waters are clear, more sunlight can reach submerged vegetation, which is food for waterfowl. The dead trees also serve as a platform where new plants can grow.
Another benefit to the program? The trees don't end up in a landfill where they decompose, releasing methane, a potent greenhouse gas.
Canada is warming up from climate change at twice the rate of the rest of the world, according to a new report. The average temperature there is 1.7 degrees Celsius, or 3 degrees Fahrenheit, higher than it was 70 years ago, about twice the global average increase. Northern parts of the country are warming even more.
A government agency commissioned the report, which also concludes that the warming already produced by carbon dioxide emissions from human activity is effectively irreversible.
The Guardian reports that scientists don't fully understand the reasons for the increased temperatures in Canada, but melting snow and ice reveal darker, warmer surfaces that don't reflect the sun's heat. The retreat of glaciers and disappearing sea ice contribute to a feedback loop that increases warming.
The increased warmth will lead to greater precipitation in places and also more severe heat waves and higher risks of drought and wildfires.
Canada has some of the largest carbon emissions in the world due to oil, gas, and petrochemical industries. And people there drive the least efficient vehicles, eat a lot of beef, and fly often. Some provinces still burn a lot of coal.
The report says that the only way to keep global temperature rise in line with targets set by the Paris Climate Summit is for global emissions to peak almost immediately, to be followed by rapid and deep reductions. And finally, airplane bathrooms suck, both literally and figuratively. Not only do you have to maneuver into tiny spaces to do your business, you have to brace yourself for the loud sucking sound when you flush. That noise not only terrifies small children, but can reverberate throughout the cabin.
Although planes have become lighter and more efficient, toilets haven't changed. That's because getting airplane toilets to flush with very little water requires a vacuum, which at 38,000 feet pulls air at nearly half the speed of sound. When things move at that speed, any disturbance to the flow, like the bend of a pipe or a valve opening or closing, generates significant noise.
But take heart, frequent flyers. Researchers at Brigham Young University have invented a toilet that's about half as loud.
According to a university press release, to solve the problem, the BYU team focused on three valve positions that are noisy during the flush cycle. They added additional piping to increase distances between the toilet bowl and the flush valve and made the pipes more of a gradual bend rather than a sharp 90-degree angle.
The quieter commode was simple physics, they say, and note that current airplane toilets can easily be retrofitted with their design.
The vacuum-assisted toilets could also be used on cruise ships and trains, and even in new buildings to reduce water use. The sky's the limit.
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Explore new trends in technology at ACE 19, June 9th through 12th in Denver. Learn more at awwaace.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.